Kane.
Visit our website at smarthealthtalk.com. Welcome to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Welcome, everyone, to Smart Health Talk. And do we have a special show for you today? I mean, we brought in a person that is so hot right now as far as people wanting to know what the heck is going on with their food. Are they eating food that's even does it have any nutritional value? Is it contaminated with GMOs and pesticides? Are these things good? Are they bad? Nope. You know, there's so many people out there that are confused on this subject. That's why I am so glad that I have today Howard Bligler, and he is a farmer that has been out there working with other farmers, helping them transition from being addicted to pesticides and genetically modified seeds and getting off of that horrible nightmare bandwagon that they've been on and getting back to what it means to be a real farmer. And that's what I'm excited to talk about. Anyone that knows me knows that I come from a family of farmers, and it's near and dear to my heart that people could actually have that dream of being a farmer someday, having a little farm where their family can be safe and they don't have to worry about something happening to their kids in the process. And so we have Howard here with us today, but we also have two very special moms. And I tell you, I can't even imagine some of the things that these moms have had to go through. And the first mom that we have here is Zen Honeycutt. And then we also have with her Kathleen Kelly Halal. And these moms have been through quite an ordeal. And that's because what has happened to them has affected their children. And anyone that's a mom out there knows that when it comes to your kids, it just hits a special chord inside of you emotionally, and there's just something that comes out. It's like that protection part of us, that some sort of barbaric thing that says, you know, you are not going to hurt my child. And so I think, you know, just that that emotion after what happened to their children triggered that inside of them enough to spark a desire to do something. And I am so impressed with these women, and I am excited to be up for you to hear their story. And I don't want to waste any more time. I want to get right into it. And so I'm going to go ahead and start with Zen. Why don't both of you just start by introducing yourself, and then maybe tell like about at least 5 minutes of like what happened to you, your story, and then we'll go to the other one, and then we'll talk about like together, you know, what you guys are working on, how we can get involved. Other mothers out there that are maybe experiencing the same thing, they don't know what to do, they want to take action, you know, how do I get involved? And I'm hoping I'm hearing moms like that out there, because that's exactly what we need. We need more moms just like Zen and Kathleen. So, Zen, go ahead and tell us your story.
Oh, great. Thank you so much, first of all, for having us here today. I'm so excited to share, because I have 3 boys, as Kathleen does as well. And in my case, all 3 have allergies, and some of them are life-threatening. My kids are allergic to dairy, wheat, eggs, milk, nuts, red food dye, and we recently found out my eldest is allergic to carrageenan, which is a seaweed food thickener, and it's in pretty much everything: hot dogs, ice cream, sauces, candy, lunch meats, everything that a kid likes to eat, right, at Cub Scout events or birthday parties or everything like that. And when the last allergy came about, you know, I really started investigating, because I started asking, why can he eat hot dogs one day, but the next day he can't? What is going on here? You know, the nut
that would be disturbing.
Yeah, the nut allergy people have pretty much been like, oh, well, I don't know what's going on, but a lot of kids are allergic to nuts these days, you know? Same thing with milk. It's just sort of, oh, something's happening, you know, we're allergic to lactose or something. But carrageenan, what the heck, what is that, right? So I started researching, and that's when I found Robin O'Brien's TED Talk, which is amazing. It's an 18-minute video which will alter your life on TED Talk. You can find it on YouTube for free. And I cried during that video, because not just because it was so upsetting to find out what's going on with our food, with genetically modified food, because she asked the question, is there a foreign invader in my food? Because that's how the body reacts to an allergy. It sees a foreign invader. So she asked the question, is there a foreign invader in my food? And she found out about genetically modified food. And I cried during that video, not just because of finding out what's been going on for 14 years with our food, but because of some relief. Because after 9.5 years of feeding my children this food, I could now do something about it.
Just that knowing, you know, knowing what the heck's going on so that you can then defend yourself and defend your children.
Yeah.
I completely understand that.
Yeah. So then I watched Genetic Roulette and really learned all about it. And it was like taking off a veil, you know, like a blanket away from your eyes, and being able to see the food industry and what's in the grocery stores for real, and really see what's in our food. And my son inspired me, actually. When I told him about the genetically modified foods, he said, oh, so it's something that's in the food. And I said, yeah. He said, you know, Mommy, you know how I'm like, you call me compassionate and sensitive, because he is very sensitive. I said, yeah. He said, so the inside of my body is sensitive too. It can sense what's bad for everybody.
Isn't that observant? Kids are so smart.
And he said, what if I do a report for the kids at school? Because, you know, a lot of them that eat junk food, that's why the teachers yell at them. They're eating all this junk food and they're acting all crazy. What if I do a report at school and show them that if they eat these other foods, that they'll feel better? And I was like, you mean like an extra credit science report? And he's like, yeah. And I said, that's awesome. I at first I thought in my head, I don't really want to do another report. You know, it was 2 weeks before school. But I helped him with it, and he did the report on the third day of school called Happy Healthy Students Report. And, you know, really why I'm here today to talk to you about the Moms Across America March to Label GMOs is inspired from my son, because he stood up and got in front of his classroom of kids that he didn't really know that well, and he spoke up and said, I'm going to share this and help save the world and tell people about good foods that you can eat that will make you feel better, be a better student, feel happier. And that's why I'm here today. And
thank you. Well, thanks for sharing that, Zen. I mean, that's exactly the reason why we have this radio show, Smart Health Talk. We're, you know, to bring on, you know, people like yourself that are telling the true story of what's happening out there. Because what, I mean, how do you compare your story compared to what you see on television and what's projected on television?
My kids yell at the TV. When they see ads for these big junk food, fast food companies, they're like, they know it's all lies.
Wow. Yeah, I tell you, your son has now inspired me, and it makes it, you know, because you need that. Sometimes, you know, it gets so hard. You're out there trying to fight, you know, this huge, giant corporation, and to stay strong and motivated and passionate and excited. Sometimes it's hard because the world kind of knocks you down a lot, and I know a lot of us felt that way that fought for Prop 37 to get that passed. But, you know, I just really trust that things happen the way they're supposed to, and the way I envisioned it was to have the whole country behind it so strongly that they can't stop it. So you are, it's your stories that are helping to enlighten people and make all that happen, where we can start to look at food, like you said, in a different way and see it for what it really is. I challenge all the moms out there to start reading their labels and look for carrageenan. And that's, I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I know there's a lot of controversy over with the NOP and the Organic Trade Association on whether carrageenan should be allowed in organic foods.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's something that's in hot debate right now. And what you're saying is, my child was allergic to carrageenan, and that supports the people that are saying, no, this should not be allowed in organic foods either. So thank you very much for that. I'm glad we have someone to give us the, you know, the true perspective on that people really do get an allergic reaction from carrageenan, everyone.
I just want to say he got a red rash around his mouth that lasted for 2 weeks. It looked like a
That was the symptoms?
That was the symptom for him. And when I went online, there were hundreds of people that did not know what this was. And I finally
Anything else that you saw that...
Well, his lips flared up, red rash around the mouth, and it lasted for 2 weeks, and it was painful and embarrassing, and he had to go to
school. And how long after they had the food did that happen?
Almost immediately.
Really?
So you
knew that was the connection?
Once I was told by actually an iridologist, who's an alternative way to go.
Oh, yeah.
She looks at your eyes, and
right,
she said that was it. Western medical doctors couldn't tell me what it was. But, you know, I want to say that what causes that allergy to carrageenan is, for me, is what I have seen is that when they eat the genetically modified foods and it erodes their stomach lining, you know, with the pesticide in it, that's the connection that we're seeing through talking through healthcare doctors and alternative healthcare doctors, that it's when you eliminate that, he's improved dramatically. He's going just organic and non-GMO. He's improved dramatically. He was actually exposed to the carrageenan just recently through toothpaste at the dentist office. And after being 2 or 3 months organic, his lips just got a tiny bit pink. He didn't get the whole line around his mouth, so his stomach is healing from going non-GMO and organic.
I'm glad that you mentioned that carrageenan is in toothpaste, because there's a lot of hidden places. Like, people think food, first of all, because we've been talking about food, but you're saying, you know, it's also another non-food item. So, you know, that's how aware you have to be as parents nowadays. And we wish it was easy and we didn't have to worry about these things, but the truth is we do. And so next, I'd like to welcome Kathleen. Kathleen, you want to go ahead and share your story with us?
Sure. Thank you so much for having us today. Really, it's nice to be able to talk to people out there and maybe help some other mothers who are suffering with conditions that their children might have. I'm also a mother of 3 boys, and our oldest boy in the middle of second grade, he'd been a perfectly normal, well-behaved, you know, top student in school. He started to act really strangely. He didn't want to go to school anymore. He would hide under his desk. He wouldn't do anything we said. He had anxiety. He wouldn't go to sleep. He would fight and then be kind of angry all the time. And we couldn't really explain it. And he was called into the counselor's office in school. And the school counselor, you know, who's a PhD, she didn't know him because he'd never had any issues before. But she spoke with him for like 20 minutes. And she said, well, I think you should put this child on antidepressants. You know, if you're a good mother, you'll put him on antidepressants. And I said, well, you know, you don't really know this boy and we don't know what's going on. And so I kept searching, and my husband and I, you know, we went to counselor after counselor. We went to the, you know, top counseling center for children at UCI, and we went to really the top doctors in Orange County to try and find out what was going on with our son. And nobody could explain it to us. And finally, through the help of our family counselor, we were directed to a dyslexia specialist who, you know, talk to him a little bit, because I said, I know he has the idea still in his head, but he lost his ability to do math. He forgot math. He couldn't write anymore. His handwriting got really, really bad, really messy. And I said, I know he still has these ideas in his head, but he says he can't write. So we talked to her for a little bit, and she said, I think if you remove his tonsils, this behavior will all go away. And I couldn't believe it, you know. But at this point, we'd been through so many doctors. We spent thousands of dollars. That I was willing to look into it. She said, go to an ENT and get him really thoroughly checked for strep. And, you know, even though he'd been to the pediatrician 2-3 times and an internist, and they'd all given him a clean bill of health, you know, they'd taken throat swabs, and he didn't have any signs of strep. We did it. We went to an ENT, and the ENT looked really deep down into his tonsils and said, oh, well, there is a little bit of scarring there. So then the next step was we went for a blood test. And in the blood test, they measure the antibodies. They call it, a blood titer test. There are 3 tests that you can have done for your child. It's ASO, streptozyme, and anti-DNase B. And I can't remember exactly right now, but I think in 2 of these 3 blood tests, the strep titers were shown to be elevated, higher than normal. So that fact, coupled with the fact that, you know, he had these behavioral changes that had come on pretty suddenly, and the slight scarring on his tonsils, we decided to go ahead and remove the tonsils and see what happened. So we had his tonsils taken out, and we put him on antibiotics for, I think it was a course of like 21 days. It was quite a bit of medicine, and he got better. And after that, you know, we had to keep him on antibiotics kind of periodically. You treat it like rheumatic fever. And we kind of gradually watched the titer levels of the strep go down in his blood month after month. And as the strep titers went down, his behavior improved. His handwriting came back. His math came back. His personality came back. He was happy again. He was completely himself. I would say that, you know, he recovered very well over a period of nine months. And we thought we found the answer at that point because he was better. But then we went to another doctor because I kind of wanted to keep checking for ways to keep him very healthy, and I wanted to find a way to stop giving him the antibiotics. So I started researching diet, and I learned about GMOs. And
can I ask you a question? At any time, had any of the doctors questioned you very much on the diet that you were feeding your child? Or
no, although one doctor we finally went to, this is how I got into the GMOs. He took blood tests of actually all three of our boys because he said a lot of these children are having food allergies and food sensitivities that are they're causing inflammation and they're setting the antibodies into action, and the kids are developing antibodies to all kinds of foods, but it doesn't necessarily show on the outside. So we went to this doctor, and he gave us blood tests. He gave the boys blood tests. And when the results came back, the blood test said that all three of our boys actually had food sensitivities and food allergies. Our oldest boy, the one with autoimmune issues, had two allergies that show a reaction. That's to peanuts and penicillin. But he had a really high food sensitivity to dairy. And it didn't show on the outside when he consume dairy, and his neurologist explained that that's probably because of his autoimmune disorder, that it helps to suppress reactions. And so I just thought that was the strangest thing, that these children could have these food problems going on that you can't really see on the outside. And so then I started looking into food and food quality and GMOs, and I found out that GMOs in the body are recognized as foreign proteins, and so the body kind of goes on alert when you eat these foods, and on the inside there's a lot of inflammation and a lot of chaos going on, and antibodies are actually developed to these foods, and that's a problem for someone like me who's trying to keep my children's antibody levels low, because once the children have the condition of PANDAS, which may be started by a strep infection, and it may be a particular strain of strep, they don't know yet, but once a child starts to have this, then if they have an antibody reaction to anything, even a cold, a flu, chicken pox, hand, foot, and mouth disease, Lyme disease, these other things can trigger PANDAS as well. So I have to be ever vigilant.
What is PANDAS?
It's called pediatric autoimmune neurological disorder associated with strep. And there are a lot of politics around it, and there are some doctors that accept that it's a real condition and some that don't, and there's kind of a battle going on. But Susan Sweeto of the National Institute for Health is doing major studies on PANDAS. And there's an organization called Saving Sammy. And you can go to the Facebook page, Saving Sammy, Facebook.
Is this a new thing, or is it something that was around a long time ago, but now we're seeing more cases?
There are kind of records of it here and there in the past, going all the way back to the Bible. There are passages. And in Greek history texts, there are references to people kind of going a little nuts because they have strep, an infection. And I'm not sure exactly what the wording is, but there were studies here and there, and there's a related condition called Sydenham's chorea, which happens where it looks like people are kind of dancing, but actually they have strep, and it causes their bodies to have involuntary tics or movements. That's another symptom that people can have. So it's been around. However, I discovered that since the mid-90s, when GMOs were introduced to our food supply, this condition has sort of skyrocketed. And it's, you know, in my mind, a giant coincidence that, you know, along with autism, autoimmune issues, behavioral issues, ADHD, peanut and food allergies, all these things that are driving our kids nuts. I mean, there's a real change in the population of children. If you talk to school nurses or school teachers or pediatricians who've been around for years, they are all seeing, all of them, that so many children are having different issues.
Well, should we trust our health professionals? Well, maybe.
Yes.
Maybe we should be.
Yes. I mean, the ones who are savvy enough.
I'm a health professional. You yes. should definitely be listening to me.
Yes.
So,
but the question is, is it okay? The question is that how to treat it once it comes up. The real problem with this condition, PANDAS or similar issues, is that it looks behavioral. But really what's causing it is an underlying infection. But a lot of medical professionals, sadly, see the behavioral issues, and they want to give medication right away. They want to give ADHD medication, SSRIs. They want to put the kids on prescriptions right away. And nobody thinks to check the blood for the antibody levels. And thankfully, our son was able to avoid any of that medication, and now he's completely healthy. But we had to do it through first antibiotics to get the antibody titer levels down, and then through diet to stop aggravating his system and get rid of the GMOs so that we could lower the antibody levels for the foods, too, that were also causing inflammation, because I think most people know that our immune system is based in the gut, and you have to keep that healthy in order to keep the body healthy.
Everything is coming from our gut. I totally agree with you. And from what I'm hearing that you're saying, it's almost like you get this infection of Streptococcus aureus, and then your body is never able to totally overcome it. You're never able to, like, get rid of it. It, like, lingers in there.
That's right. But there are no symptoms on the outside. You don't know. You don't know what's in there.
Yeah, and then eventually the just the presence of Streptococcus aureus in the body is incredibly destructive. Its purpose is to destroy cells.
That's right.
And so that's happening, and then I know I've heard also that just leaky gut compromising that thin layer of intestinal tract where the actual food particles are getting in the blood.
Yes.
And that's why we're seeing like these allergic reactions
yes.
to food. Because
yes.
it's like traveling around in the blood and the body's like, you know, what the heck is this broccoli doing in the blood here?
Yeah.
This does not belong.
That's
right.
Not that the broccoli's bad. It's just that
yeah.
the leaky gut happened at that moment that you ate broccoli or carrageenan or avocado or strawberry. I mean, there are kids that are allergic to the strangest things now.
So what do you guys do? Like, what is your life like now? Are you careful with every single food item?
I do my best. I think Zen might be a little more successful. I would say we're probably on about 70-30, you know, non-GMO to GMO. We drive to four different markets. We shop at Trader Joe's, Mother's, Whole Foods. We go to the farmer's market on the weekends. We do the best we can. At home, we keep our food all GMO-free and organic. But then when you're out living your life, you know, sometimes they want pizza or, you know, it's very, very hard as a mother because the foods containing GMOs are everywhere. And the children are tempted, and they want to be like normal children.
Well, that was Monsanto's goal. And they want to take over everything on our plate. That's their goal. And this is a warning right here on what can happen. And then just the thought of, you know, pregnant women being exposed to these
yes.
things, too.
The baby formulas have GMOs. If you don't buy organic.
46-64% of formula is made out of soy, GMO soy. And that is sprayed with glyphosate. And glyphosate, which I'm sure Howard will talk about more, draws out the vital nutrients of any living thing. So these babies are drinking formula that has glyphosate on it and is GMO that draws out vital nutrients of a living being.
To me, that's the worst.
To me, that's criminal.
I used to be a WIC dietitian, and I knew this stuff, and I hated every single second of it. And it was my goal to eventually change that. I would have moms come in to WIC, you know, crying to me about all of the symptoms that their babies were
colic.
Experiencing.
Yep.
And, you know, I wanted to say, you know, quit feeding them this formula, go get some organic formula. But that's a hard thing to do if they.
There's a bill going forth in Connecticut right now, in I believe it's in Ledyard, where they're trying to have formula labeled if it's GMO. So there are moms out there that are working hard to do this all across the country.
And all moms can fight this.
All moms need to fight this.
Okay, Panda Moms, everyone. Both these women are a member of Panda Moms, and you heard the definition of panda from Kathleen. Oh, Kathleen and you started Panda Moms, is that correct?
No, well, I'm the leader of the OC Panda support group, but it actually there's a mother named Beth Maloney. She's she lives back in Maine, but she travels a lot to talk about pandas, and her Facebook page is Saving Sammy. It's called Saving Sammy. Sammy's the name of her son, and she figured this out. She made a promise to God that if she were able to help her son, that she would help other mothers and help other children who have this condition. It does go away. Her son is in college, very successful. I think he has like 3 majors. He's doing very well. And she's wonderful. Beth's wonderful. But she wrote a book called Saving Sammy. And if you're interested in the subject, read that book to go through her experience. But Saving Sammy is a Facebook page. And then Zen is starting a march that mothers can participate in to really do something about the GMOs.
And what? Go ahead and tell us about
that's called Moms Across America March to Label GMOs. And that's going to be on July 4th. All across America at a parade near you. It doesn't matter if you're on vacation. There's going to be a July 4th parade near you, and you can sign up very soon. You can come to momsacrossamerica.com page and find out more information about it. We don't have the sign-up ready yet. It's going to be this fantastic map where you can see where people are signing up all across America, but it'll be very soon. And there's also a Facebook page called Moms Across America March to Label GMOs. And we've had 186,000 people in the first couple of weeks that were finding out about it. We have 34 marches now signed up on our...
Go, girls!
Yeah, so it's happening. I mean, I talk to moms from Idaho, Iowa, Connecticut, Florida, Tennessee. I mean, this is a daily basis now. People are contacting and saying, we want GMOs labeled. We want to know.
Were you overwhelmed by the response? Were you surprised? At the way everything is like happening,
you're surprised. I guess yes, because for so long, as Kathleen must feel, you struggle as a mom on a daily basis to feed your kids at least 6 times a day, right? Yes. And you just struggle to feed them, you know, healthy food that's non-GMO. And when you reach out and you find another mom in another state, or in another county, or in another town, even that feels the same way you do, that's going through the same thing you do. I mean, it just it all comes together, and it's so empowering. It's really, this is our country. These are our kids. This is our food. We buy 85% of the food. It's up to us. It's up to us moms. Moms buy 85% of the food.
And so what would you say to moms out there to just get started?
To just get started, buy organic. And look for the non-GMO Project Verified label. And look especially if you're eating soy or corn. Just buy organic.
You can go to the Institute. What's
for responsible
Technologies?
Yeah, just type in Institute. Non-GMO shopping list.
Right, non-GMO shopping guide.
.com. Yes. And we have the link to the app right on our homepage, smarthealthtalk.com, so you can find it there, everyone.
Yep.
And okay, well, we've been listening to Kathleen and Zen talk about what it's like to be a mom with a child that has these type of allergies and how serious it is and how it's changed their life and the lives of their children. And, you know, that should get everyone. Everyone right now should be listening to every word that we have. Our next guest, Howard, it's Bigler. And he's a farmer, and he's out there fighting the fight to make it possible for us to not have to worry about whether our food has these contaminants in it, these GMOs. He's out there trying to help at the point where it really makes a difference, at the farm, where it's grown, how it's grown. And so, Howard, I want to welcome you to Smart Health Talk. Thank you so much for being here, and I'm ready to just dig into that brain of yours and, like, find out about all the important things that you have to say, because this is a message to everyone, and I love what Kathleen and Zen we're talking about as far as this being, has to do with our country. You know, this is like whether we have a country full of sick people, mm-hmm. weak people, or whether we have a country full of strong people that are not sick and mm-hmm. and having to spend hundreds and thousands and millions and billions of dollars on health care that we don't even have to spend it on, that we yeah. wouldn't have to spend it on. If Howard over here does his job the way he's supposed to do it. So, Howard, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about, like, what it is that you're doing out there.
Well, thank you for having us on. It's good that you're helping to get the word out. That's very, very important. Thanks to Kathleen. I'm back in California again this week to give presentations to help educate people about GMOs and the toxins associated with the production of the GMO crops. I became a student of the soil in 1989, and from that point till today, I continue to learn how to assist interested family farmers in what we term as biological crop production methods. And I started studying GMOs in 1994, was suspicious of them, and from firsthand experience on limited testing that we did on our farm, we found out right away they were not good for our livestock. But then as it continued to come into the feed supply of the family farmers that we worked with, we saw consistent problems time and time and time again. And from that hands-on experience, then I believe the good Lord was very instrumental in connecting us to the right scientists and researchers throughout the world. And I'm very, very blessed to work with a lot of PhD researchers from all over the world that have consistently documented damage from GMO crops and from glyphosate, which is the active chemical ingredient in Roundup herbicide or other glyphosate-based herbicides, which are the most widely used herbicides in the world. The GMO itself, just the process of making the genetically modified crop, causes the establishment of these foreign proteins like Kathleen mentioned. And in livestock, we saw that very visibly. Having the experience that I did working for a veterinary for 8 years when I got out of high school, mm-hmm. we knew that when the digestive system is messed up, you're in trouble. Well, that's that way with all mammals. And the irritation, inflammation, erosions, and ulcers that we would witness in the stomachs of the animals along
with...
So
you actually cut them open and saw this.
When the animals died, we would do a post-mortem, and that irritation in the stomach was absolutely consistent, and that led us to gather a significant amount of anecdotal information, which led to conducting a scientific study. I cannot comment directly on the results of that study yet because it's still pending publication. But you could put it two different ways. Okay, do I need a scientific study to tell me that when I feed this GMO crop, I have this specific health problem with this livestock, and if I quit feeding this GMO crop, that problem goes away? Now, to a farmer, that's common sense and real life happenings. This is costing me money if I feed this. It's affecting the health of my animals. If I quit doing it, that problem's no longer there. The thing that has happened to much of production agriculture, there was a tidal wave of the movement of the introduction of the genetically engineered crops. The reason that they got the foothold and the success that they did was because the simplicity and the ease that came from using them short term. Today, it's not that simple anymore because as the unwise implementation of them has occurred and they have developed resistant weeds, we've seen the development of resistant pests, and it just keeps accelerating and getting worse. And this, just the aspect back to the foreign protein again. Dr. Pustai was one of the first scientists that documented this because he researched the BT potato, the genetically engineered BT potato. The regular.
Tell us what BT stands for.
BT is Bacillus thuringiensis. It's a natural occurring soil bacterium that organic farmers can actually use. If they have a pest infestation in a crop, they can spray on this BT. The BT is consumed by the insect. It causes their gut to basically explode. and it kills them. The natural BT is then non-toxic to anything after that, but the genetically engineered version of BT that is put in the corn and cotton plants that the GM industry has introduced to the marketplace, Cornell University did a study that found that that toxin was actually active 9 months after the plant it was raised in was dead and having an adverse effect on the beneficial organisms in the soil. So they've stepped into an arena where there's no control, there's no precision. They claim that there is, but it's very much dirty science, from to use the words of some of my PhD scientist friends. And if it was precise as they say, they wouldn't have to use things like Agrobacterium, which is a cancer cell of the soil, or a virus, the cauliflower mosaic virus. They insert that with the genetically engineered
event. So you're actually eating that virus when you're eating GMOs?
There's not adequate independent testing to document what the side effects may be of this. There was just a study published.
But it is there.
Well, it's unknown, but every study that's independently done is documenting more problems. The problem is there's not enough research to do the follow-up to pinpoint some of the things. There again,
We never asked Monsanto to do it either.
Well, the studies that the industry has provided for supposed safety purposes
to lease them on the
has well, when industry studies have been reviewed by independent scientists, this happened in France. They wanted a specific genetically engineered corn introduced into the country, and the regulatory people said, prove that it's safe. Well, when they took the research data from the industry and an independent scientist reviewed the data that the industry provided, their own data proved there were significant health issues to the animals that consumed that crop that they said was safe. So that raises up a topic that we could talk about the whole day, but
yeah,
I'll just step away from that.
Wasn't really stepping in there.
So the foreign protein aspect of the GMO is the number one concern that people need to recognize. The second one that is getting more and more discovery and documented scientific proof every day is the glyphosate residue. Glyphosate is the active chemical ingredient in Roundup herbicide.
It's a Roundup Ready, everyone, that you buy at your local Home Depot or...
Well, and I would suggest to the listeners, if you're buying Roundup in any form to spray weeds around your property, you're contributing significantly to this problem. The contamination of the water supply, the contamination of the air. Don't spray the weeds in your garden with Roundup. Don't spray the weeds in your sidewalk with Roundup. My mother had a very effective way of killing the weeds in the crack in the sidewalk. She'd boil water in the teapot on the stove and boiling water on the weed, and then could pull it right out. And that was not toxic to anything. That glyphosate residue that's in the crack of that cement ends up in the drinking water.
I've heard vinegar works, too.
We could talk about that for a whole day, too.
I pay my kids to pick them.
But anyway,
I definitely want to have you back, because I do want to talk about all those things. But go ahead and explain to us what's going on.
The glyphosate, the testing that's been done on glyphosate, the independent testing, has consistently proven harm. It's a very strong endocrine disruptor, or it causes the malformation of cells. Now, this can be severe, whether it's in an adult, of course, when you mess with the cellular regeneration and the formation, you have cancer develop as a pretty well consistent happening. The only lifetime feeding study where they fed GMO corn to lab animals for their lifetime, 70 to 80% of the rats that ate the GMO corn developed mammary tumors. Two-thirds of them died prematurely. They also had a segment in that study where they fed them in their drinking water a less than legal limit of glyphosate residue in their water. Same results. Tumor development, premature death.
And we're not talking just any tumors here either. We're talking like tumors like they'd never even seen before, aren't we?
It was significant, the amount of tumors that they had. And the industry...
The growth speed.
Yes, that was true. And then the industry comes out and says, well, they used the wrong kind of rat because that rat is prone to have tumors. That's true. That rat is prone to have tumors. But it's the same rat that the industry used to supposedly prove that this stuff is all safe. So how can they say that it's the wrong rat to use in this case, but when they're testing it, it's the right rat to use?
That's a very good point.
So the glyphosate residue issue, it's a very strong chelator, glyphosate is. It chelates calcium, magnesium, manganese, zinc, iron, copper, nickel, cobalt, boron.
So when you're saying that it's chelating, is it pulling it out of our bones?
No, it's... A chelate is a Greek word meaning claw or to hold. It will tie up these nutrients. It'll tie up those nutrients wherever the glyphosate residue is present. It'll tie it up in the soil. It can tie it up in the plant. It can tie it up in the grain. If the glyphosate residue is in the grain, and absolutely it's
so
there.
So you eat it, and then it can possibly tie up those
nutrients.
It can
chelate those nutrients wherever it's present, and glyphosate is also a very strong biocide or antibiotic. And the industry cannot say this is not true because the lead biotech company in the world has patented glyphosate as an antibiotic with the U.S. Patent Office in the United States. It's patent number 7771736.
So some of the bacteria that it's killing are the good guys.
It kills mostly beneficial and promotes the growth of the opportunistic. That's how it is effective in being a herbicide. A weed will not die if it's sprayed with glyphosate when it's raised in sterile soil. If there's no opportunistic organisms there to kick into overdrive, the weed will not die. There was another scientific study that was done where they sprayed the glyphosate and a fungicide simultaneously. There was no herbicidal effect because the herbicidal effect is a result of the fungal disease that is caused as a side effect to the glyphosate killing the good organisms and promoting the opportunistic, which causes the plant disease that actually kills the weed. So when you put on the fungicide and the herbicide at the same time, you wiped out any herbicidal benefits of the herbicide.
So you're also saying that the way that glyphosate works is it's actually starving the plant of nutrients because it's chelating nutrients within the soil also. So it's actually starving the plant, plus it's creating these opportunistic overgrowth of fungi and
It stops the EPSPS function within the plant. This is real technical, but to simplify it, there's no growth hormones that are able to move throughout the plant, so it stunts it. It's like putting a brick on its head. Then it stops the plant's ability to defend itself against disease while it's simultaneously killing good organisms in the root zone of the plant that would control the opportunistic organisms that cause the increase in disease. And basically, you're putting a brick on his head, tying his hands behind his back, and beating him up.
Can I ask you, this is a question I've had in my mind. The antioxidants, the one thing in plants that we know protects us against disease, it was my understanding that antioxidants are formed as the plant is going through a defense mode, so that, you know, that's actually a result of the body defending itself, kind of like our bones actually create more bone when we challenge it, kind of a thing. That's the way I understood it. And then if you're taking away that whole defense mechanism, then you've stopped the ability to make antioxidants, which are the very thing we want in plants to protect us against disease. Does that make sense?
I won't disagree with that, but in the plant itself, the chelating effects in combination with the biocidal effects and the surrounding environment effect is what is challenging it. And when they genetically engineer the plant to withstand the application of glyphosate or glufosinate-based herbicides, they do nothing to deal with those chelating effects. So even the crops that are genetically engineered to tolerate them are suffering significantly, and we're getting more and more proof of that every day, And this past year in the drought, we saw dramatic failures of the genetically engineered crop when there was a properly raised non-GMO conventional crop right next to it. Now, the industry will say, well, gee, we did all these wonderful things, and we've got this drought tolerance coming, and it's saved everything, and it's really, really good. But they stacked the deck when they set up their trials because, first of all, they don't use the same parentage in their genetics in their seed trial. They won't put the conventional version of this hybrid that may have good natural resistance to a lot of these things, and then put the genetically engineered version right next to it. They'll pick a weak one and put it next to a different genetic and then insert the gene and then claim the benefit is all coming from the genetic engineering
well,
and the
really
insertion.
Exactly.
Plus, they have prohibited our land-grant universities from doing any research on this unless they sign off on it. It's illegal for any of our researchers at our land-grant universities across the country to do any research to say, is this really doing what they say it's supposed to do? No, they can't.
How can that even be legal? That doesn't even, like, sound right to me, just tying their hands, scientists' hands behind their back. And I know that they did buy Biologic over in the U.K., which is about ready to release all this data on how the glyphosate was killing bees.
Yes.
And here they bought the nonprofit that was about ready to release the data.
Yes.
Which is, I mean, that's just keeping all of that information from everybody. It's very upsetting. So what, you know, so you're telling, are people being starved in the process of creating these foods? I mean, the nutritional, because they keep trying to say, they say, first of all, oh, well, these genetically modified foods are the same as regular foods. And then they try to say that there's the same amount of nutrition. Are we being lied to?
There's no independent scientific research to back up that statement. And the first Roundup Ready soybean that was examined by regulatory people in the United States never had Roundup sprayed on it in the production of it. So there's a lot of what-ifs and maybes, and people from the right place and the right company have been at the right regulatory agency at the right time. So,
Well, and how deep is all this? Like, you know, you're talking like I want to do another show where we really get down into the microscopic workings in the soil, but you do have a presentation that kind of goes into that as well. Is that correct?
Yes, and we'll be doing that. We did an abbreviated version of it at the university this morning to a couple classes, and we have a number of public presentations that we'll be doing, and it's going to be recorded so that we can have those DVDs made up and have copies of those made available.
What are we on the road to here? I mean, what's the worst case scenario if we keep going the way we're going?
Well, Dr. Huber's a very good friend of mine. He's a retired emeritus research professor from Purdue University, one of many, many qualified researchers that I am privileged to work with. And I can't quote it word for word, but he makes a statement, something to this effect. Are we sacrificing our future generations? Will historians say it's not about how much insecticide or pesticide that was applied, but how willing we were to sacrifice future generations for ignoring what evidence was before us, all for the benefit of a few corporations, financial gain?
Well, people are afraid that it's going to cost them more money if we change over into a more organic type system. Should people have these fears that the prices of their food is going to go up and they're not going to be able to afford anything if we don't have GMOs? Because that's pretty much what Monsanto has been telling us.
What happened to the cost of the food in the last 6 to 9 months? It went up significantly because of drought all the way across the country, and they blamed it on drought. Just bear with me.
Okay.
I can show you where biologically produced corn yielded in excess of 100 bushels an acre. Right across the fence was the latest and the greatest genetically engineered version of Roundup Ready corn that made 12 bushels an acre or 27 bushels an acre or 28 bushels an acre versus 100 right in between that. So what happened to the cost of food as a result of genetic engineering? Don't blame it on the weather. Blame it on the true fault. There is science that documents the fact that when you put the Roundup Ready gene in a plant, you're going to need more than twice as much water to raise the same amount of crop. Put the blame.
Twice as much water when we're
put the blame where the blame belongs.
We don't have that much water right now. Now, there's another really important question I wanted to ask you, because the owner of our radio station, KCAA, Fred Lundgren, is also a farmer, and he said that what happens with it's the timing with GMOs, because they're planted earlier, that screws up the farmers that are not planting GMOs, because of the way that the pollen blows onto their crops, or there's something with the timing with when they plant GMOs that sabotages the other farmers that are not planting GMOs.
I believe he's referencing a situation where if there was a GMO farmer on one side of the fence and an organic farmer on the other side of the fence, that the organic farmer would want to plant his crop at a different time frame so that those crops would not pollinate at the same time, and it would reduce his risk of having his non-GMO crop contaminated by the pollen from the GMO crop. And that can be done, there's more testing that needs to be done to verify how widespread that contamination is. There's some research that shows that pollen could travel 5 miles in the right conditions. But we have done anecdotal testing to where there's very little contamination across the fence. And altering your timing by as little as a week may be enough in preventing that contamination.
So this is important information for farmers, I'm sure.
Right. Well, and the things that we've learned of late, we've known about the glyphosate residue in feedstuffs for quite some time. And it's legal to have 20 parts per million of glyphosate residue in soy products that are raised in the United States and imported or exported around the world. It only takes a tenth of a part per million glyphosate residue to cause disruption in the digestive tract to kill beneficial organisms that allow the Clostridium botulinum organism to go into overdrive, which causes both acute and chronic botulism. It takes, in another study, it only took 2.03 parts per million of glyphosate residue to cause significant birth defects. It only took a half of a part per million of glyphosate residue to cause both the sperm and the embryo to be killed, so there was no reproduction possibilities capable.
And a lot of parents are struggling to even have children, and they're wondering why that's happening. And Dr. Benbrook said that glyphosate is the number one cause of birth defects.
There's a study, a white paper that was conducted in Europe or in Germany, where they analyzed the urine of professional people, bankers, lawyers, accountants. The vast majority of them had higher levels of glyphosate in their urine than what's legal to be in the water supply, and they don't have Roundup Ready crops in Germany. But they're using it as a burn down for no-till farming, and they're using it as a desiccant or a ripening agent prior to harvesting their crops. That has to be stopped immediately.
I've tried to tell people on this show that we know if you're not eating like a practically 100% diet or a very high percentage, your urine's going to test positive for pesticides. All of us. You could probably go out there and test, over 95% of the people, and they will test positive for pesticides. So, the fact is that we're all eating it. It's in our bodies, and we need to work on getting it out. So let's. So we're gonna kind of sum up with everything that we've talked about here today.
You're on board KCAA's Inland Talk Express. KCAA, Loma Linda, 1050 AM, the station that leaves no listener behind. You're on board KCAA's Inland Talk Express. KCAA, Loma Linda, 1050 AM, the station that leaves no listener behind.